You're just be quiet. Actually, that wasn't even a suggestion. My name is Lucinda Moore, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. That's the proudest thing I can say. In the first passage of this book, it says that this is how 100,000 alcoholics have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I think the next line is so important. It says, to show other people precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. Not tell them, show them. You know, I'd rather see a sermon than to hear one any day. I'd sooner walk with you than merely show the way. I can soon learn how to do it if you let me see it done, but your tongue too fast in action and your hands too fast may run. All the lectures you deliver may be very wise and true, but there's no mistake or understanding in how you live and what you do. I want to thank Mickey and Lori and the committee for inviting me. I've talked to them a lot on the phone. The only suggestion that I have of Mickey is if she can't find a man, stay home. I know 22 right now looking for her and can't find her. I phoned and phoned, but I want to tell you, a function like this would never happen without ladies like this. And it's so nice to see these gals in dresses and looking like a lady. You know, if you still feel you're a broad or a dame, that's okay. But it's allowed to be a lady in society today. It's perfectly allowed. So that's good. The only way I could get from the skid row to Vancouver to the Rocky Point roundup is through the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, this is the only roundup I've ever been asked to speak on. It's 1,800 miles from my home, and I flew 900 and drove another 9. Hell, I flew to speak in South Africa in 31 hours. So they really believe, and if you want what we got, and you're willing to go to any lengths to get it. I'm going to refer quite often to this book. It'll catch on one day, I think, in this fellowship. It's a very simply written book. It's based on something totally foreign to us called reality. And what's more important, it wasn't written out of a lab. It was written by people who personally experienced what they wrote about. That's different. I'm going to tell you a little story about a few more what we got. It's a story about this teenage son of a minister. He came to his dad one day and he said, Dad, when can we talk about me driving the car? Well, he said, I'll tell you. He said, when you bring your grades up, I see you reading the Bible on a regular basis, and you cut that long hair, he said, we'll talk. So about 2 months later, he came back and he said, Dad, he said, can we talk about me driving the car? And he said, sure, son. He said, I noticed you brought your grades up a bit. He said, and I have seen you reading the Bible on a fairly regular basis, but he said, you still got that long hair. He said, you know, Dad, Jacob had long hair. And Moses had long hair. And Jesus had long hair. His dad said, yeah, you're right, son. And did you notice they walked everywhere they went? So don't you ever kid yourself that just to rub elbows with people who are sober, that this thing works by osmosis. It don't. Your old ideas, it says many of us hung on to them, and the ones you didn't hang on to, they'll come back. It's like the young kid sitting out in front of his host selling a lawnmower, and the preacher come along and said, how much you want for that? He said, $5. He gave him the $5, and he took the lawnmower, and he started pulling this cord, and he said, this thing won't start. And the young kid said, you got to cuss at it a little bit. The pastor said, it's been so long since I cussed, I forgot how. He said, you just keep pulling that cord, it'll come back to you. A Well, yeah, we got the spiritual part over with. Before I go any further, I'd like you to meet two-thirds of my marriage. Linda, stand up. I love you. We tell in a general way what we were like, what happened, and what we're like now. I don't read that. I find one of the things that's important for me is to look at this book as it's printed, not as I interpret it. I looked up the word interpretation in one of the dictionaries, and it says avoidance of truth. And if you want a screwed up interpretation of something, ask me to explain it to you. So it says we tell in a general way what we were like. It doesn't say we tell in a general way what we drank like. What was I like when I drank? And then that tells you why I drank. And I was born right on the border of the state of Maine in eastern Canada. Some 4,700 miles from where I live now. And I think Harris Greeley's premonition that said, go west, young man, go west. I now, the Bible says the wise men come from the east, and I've been wise enough to stay the hell out west, I'll tell you that. There's not a lot of wisdom where I come from. I hear people say that alcoholics have above average intelligence, and the only place I ever hear that is at AA meetings. I've served on a lot of board of directorships in my 30-odd years sober in different areas, and I have never heard that statement at a boardroom table. Never have. You know, the Alk is the only person that can argue for 20 minutes with a fire hydrant and haul off and kick it, and everybody knew he was going to lose the argument right when he started. But that little town I was born in, I was taken away from my real mom. She was a beautiful lady. And it was apparently somewhere around 6 or 7 months of age, or 8 months of age, because she went away. She looked just like Olivia de Havilland. She wore the floppy hat. She was just stunning. And she had a hotel that she looked after in a railroad divisional town. And she supplied the men with everything, food, loving, and lodging. And I don't dislike her for that. She was my mom. But they took me away from her because she left me in an old farm home in the winter. And she was out with another fella. And the woman who was the lady who raised me, her sister found me in this house in the winter. And I was bloody near close to death in the old crib. And where I come from in them days, they never had all these child welfare agencies and group homes, and they had none of that. They just took and gave you to a family who would raise you. And they gave me to the two people who became my mom and dad. And the mom and dad that raised me, daddy couldn't write a word. But what's interesting, he sort of put this program into practice. Never once did he tell me how to live. He lived and let me watch him. And isn't that what this is all about? With that new guy or new gal? If you're an instructor, that's fine. I've never been able to get my certification yet as an AA instructor. But if you want someone to live according to these principles, I'd suggest it will help you greatly if you live them yourself. Because they're going to catch on pretty quick. Even with a lack of education, they'll catch on. We found out just 5 years ago that my mom had grade 5 education, so they couldn't help me a lot with schoolwork and a lot of those things. But it's amazing what those two people accomplished in life, in respect, in dignity, in how they lived, and how they treated people, and they weren't well educated. When I look at the amount of money that my mom saved out of the labor's wages in the Depression, these are the things that I think of. When I was about 11 years of age, some of the kids in school found out what my real mother was like and what she'd done, and they started teasing me. And I started fighting. Nothing wrong with that if you can fight. It took a good man to beat me. It didn't take him long, but it took a good one. After I sobered up, I had all kinds of fellas coming into my office, and they were saying, I was a good fighter, Hebrew. And they had scars going in 17 directions, and they were looking this way, and their nose was pointed that way. And I said, I hate to inform you at your age, good fighters got no marks. There's a fellow that I've admired for a lot of years. His name is Sugar Ray Leonard. His face is just like glass. We've had a lot of fights. We've won most of them. You just looked at me after a fight and you knew it was a split decision. You see, this thing is not based on how good I am. It's based on how good I live. And there's a whole lot of difference. I'm not here to entertain you. I'm not here to agree or disagree. I do not believe that I have the God-given right at a podium to turn a meeting into a roast, to get my jokes at the expense of another person's feelings. That is a privilege and a right that I don't have. And when I came to AA, I lost all my rights and was issued a set of privileges that included a set of principles. And that's how I live today. What you think of me is none of my business. I don't play games with nobody. I got 6 kids, 14 grandchildren, 5 great-grandchildren. I love playing games. I hate losing. So I don't play games. I love golf. Just love it. We play every day of the year. I won't play for money. I don't play on leagues. I'm not competing anymore. I don't compete. I don't play against people. I have enough trouble playing against Luke. Well, it's very difficult for me to realize when the ball went in the lake that I hit it there. And if you want to get into a humbling occupation or sport or recreation, go play golf. I think one of the greatest things I ever heard, I remember Sammy Davis played golf one day with President Ford. That night he was on Johnny Carson's show. Johnny said, you played with the president today, did you, Sammy? He said, yep. He said, what's your handicap? He said, you asked the one-eyed black Jew what his handicap is? This is what this program has given me, is I can laugh at myself. We always get our laughs at someone else. And this book tells me, if you read it, it says, I must be hard on myself, but considerate of others. What an order. I can't go through with it. Do you always think of someone else first? Or I is the smallest word in the English language and carries the least amount of importance. It's like the little fellow sitting, young lad sitting on the bus just before Valentine's Day. And he had a card in his lap. And his old bird went on the bus with a beautiful arrangement of flowers. And the young fellow said to him, boy, somebody's going to get a beautiful gift this year. He said, yep. He said, you have a girlfriend? He said, yes, I do. I'm giving her a card this year. He said, that's all I can afford to give her. And the old guy said, that's good. A little while later, the old fellow reached up and pulled the cord on the bus to get off of the bus. And as the bus was pulling into the curb, he laid the flowers over in the young fellow's lap. And he said, give these to your girlfriend. He said, my wife would like that. And the young fellow watched as he got off the bus and walked through the gates into a cemetery. So, do we always think of someone else? I think of when Rachel picked us up at the airport, this little gal has just done everything she could do to make our stay here so comfortable. This is what it's all about. And you know, that might even inconvenience a person. But just for today, I'll do 2 things I don't want to do. It's not just for today. You know, that's like 14 a week. Try 62 a month. Huh? This thing is simple. I have lots of friends of mine that have 18 new pigeons or whatever. I'm not a pigeon. I'll inform you of that. And they have all of these sponsees spread out like they're lining their little ducks up. And you see, I'm not like that. I remember old Elmer come back home to Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, where Cease lives, Cease C. He said, Cease, I know how we can straighten this alcohol problem out worldwide. Take like 10 years. And Cease thought, no, a snake must have bit him when he was away. And he said, no, he said, we got 2 million members, haven't we? And Cease said, yeah. He said, every one of us brings in one person next year. Forget about sponsoring 40 people. One person.
people said, yeah, what are you getting at? He said, that means we'll have four. We keep doing that. Now we'll have 8, 16, 32, 64, 108 million, 216, but 10 years we can still mess that up. Isn't that simple? But all of a sudden, I'll just say to God, I'll take over this area of your territory down here for you. And I just want to see one person get better. I want to see a little glimmer of hope come in his eyes. I want to see him when he came here feeling unwanted, unloved, hated, and despised. Walk out that door the first night with a glimmer of hope that I'm wanted, that I'm needed, and that I belong. That's what I want, with that one person. But if there's 1,500 people here, all did that between now and next year, we'd have 3,000. You see, that'll take 2 years and we'd have nobody here. Dignity comes through simplicity. So at 16 years of age in that little town I lived in, I took off on a Friday with two of my buddies and we went on a drunk. But I want to tell you, I was doing time at 16. But I went, come back the following Wednesday. And we talk about making amends. There's some amends that you can never make. You can make the amends in the individual, but it can be burnt into the conscience of your mind forever. I come home that Wednesday, I was the only child because I was adopted. My mom's a short little lady, 5 foot. And she started giving me lectures any mom would do. And why I did it, I have no idea. Don't ask me today. I hauled off and smashed her in the face, and she went down in front of our kitchen sink, and I grabbed some clothes and took off before Daddy got home. I went to Halifax, Nova Scotia. Remember, 16 and a half years of age. 17 years old. In 1985, Mom asked me if I'd come back home and see her. She was 72 years old the next time I see her. And I'm a tough SOB. I want to tell you, I look around here and I believe that nearly 100% of every man sitting here can beat hell out of me, but that don't mean you're tough. We'll see how tough you are when you go out there and face life on life's terms. I see people driving past me every day on the highway where I, in the area where I live, and their thumb fingers going and their fist is shaking and their mouth is going and they pull in front of me and it says, easy does it, live and let live. Put them on your dash. I think this is the thing that I look at more than anything else, is I think we keep vital information where we can't read it. It's amazing. It's so good for everybody else. You know, I read something the other day. Well, don't repeat it until you're practicing it. I think we don't learn a lot from past experiences. We never have. And we probably never will. You see, I have something here that has always meant a little something to me. And I think it's worth reading. It said the world would be better off if people tried to become better. And people would become better if they stopped trying to become better off. But when everybody has to become better off, nobody is better off. But when everybody tries to become better, everybody's better off. And I listen to some of the language at the meetings that I go to. And you see, I will get up and leave. The book says, are you accepting unacceptable conditions? And lots of people rationalize that and they'll say, well, he or she is new. I'm not talking about people at their very first meeting. I have a little card done up. One of my cards says, why I swear. Said it pleases my mother. Two, it is a fine mark of manliness. Three, it proves I have self-control. Four, it indicates how clearly my mind operates. Five, it makes my conversation so pleasing to everybody. Six, it leaves no doubt in anyone's mind of my good breeding. Seven, it impresses people that I have more than ordinary education. Eight, it is an unmistakable sign of culture and refinement. Nine, it makes me a very desirable personality amongst women, children, and respectable society. And ten, it's my way of honoring God. You know, we want to be accepted in society, and like it says, if you want what we got, there's a few things you have to do. And these are some of the things that I learned. I left the East Coast and went to Vancouver, and I went to the place where I was always comfortable on the Skid Row. I met a lady. It was interesting. I used to do a bit of singing and the beer parlors and that. And this fellow met one time. He said, "Come on, there's this lady. I want you to come meet her." Oh, my God. The only way him and I could have been any drunker is to be bigger. We went up to this lady's house. She had four children on welfare, and she had just been evicted from the house she was living in, and they just moved into this house this very day, and Einstein and his brother-in-law arrived. It took her approximately 5 minutes to throw both of us out. And we went somewhere that night. Don't ask me where we went. I have no idea where we went. The next morning, we woke up in this car that he had. We sat in, and I said, "Where was we last night?" And he told me the lady's name. I said, "Take me back there." And on the way back, I stopped at a corner grocery store, and I got a dozen eggs, a loaf of bread, and a pound of bacon. And we went back to this house. Her name was Winnie. And I walked in and put them on the table, and I said, "Cook me breakfast." And she did. And I was there for the next 11 and a half years. I'm just like a dog. You feed me, and I don't eat. This woman got an introduction like you have no idea. I got a job for Johnson Terminals, and within a couple of weeks I looked around at this St. Vincent de Paul furniture, and I thought, this is not good enough for my family. And I started, and that was her introduction to Bayless. Now you see, in those days in British Columbia, they maybe couldn't do that here. They could repossess everything in your home except the beds that the children slept on. They could clean it right out. And we constantly had a stove going and a fridge coming, or the TV being repossessed, or the bedroom suite constantly. And 4.5 years later, we were separated again. I was downtown. And I got thrown out of the Rainier Hotel at Carolyn Cordova for what I pray to God was my last drink. And these are some of the things that I really want to remember. I got back up to the house where Winnie and the children, there was five by that time. Sobriety don't solve everything. There's six now. I got back up to that house, and God knows how I got up there. And I knocked on the door, and she come to the door, and she's always famous for asking stupid questions. She said, "What do you want?" "How the hell would I know? I didn't even know how I got there. You want to know what I want?" She let me in, and I went in the front room, and that's where I slept. And I'll tell you the situation that the woman was living under. The lights were shut off. The phone had been disconnected. All the furniture had been repossessed except the bed for the kiddies to sleep on. She was cooking on a Coleman camp stove, whatever she had to feed the kids. And Einstein returned. And the next morning I went to take a drink of a half a bottle of wine I brought home, and a voice as clear as Buddy talking to me today said, "Lou, your drinking days are all over." And I said, "What's the number of Alcoholics Anonymous?" I don't like to swear, but Lily's very words were, "If you want the goddamn number, look it up." And that's the most she'd said to me in ages. And I thought, now she's thinking about reconciliation. I looked up the number, but her phone didn't work. So I went next door to the guy who was Joe's beer for Moses Breweries, and I phoned our central office. And we had a lovely little lady. She's passed on now, Lucy. Answered the phone. And you don't fill out one of these big forms like you fill out now when you phone in. Hell, it's all computerized. She just said, "Where do you live? How old are you?" And I told her. She said, "I'll send two guys to see you." And I got a whole bunch of very, very big questions and debates and intellectual things together to talk to these guys about. And they sent two of the dumbest idiots I've ever met my entire bloody life. Two brothers, and they were back from where I'm from on the East Coast, and I thought, you've been watching the seagulls too long to let these two birds in. And in they come. Now, when you invite two people to your home and they have to sit on the floor, you shouldn't really have a great deal to say. But I really got wound up. And one brother, he was sober 6 months, he said, "No, Lou, we do it day at a time." And then I started tearing my neighbor apart, and he said, "Oh, no, Lou," he said, "live and let live." Every now and then he'd poke his brother in the ribs. He'd say, "Is that right, Don?" He'd say, "Yep." That's all he said. Every time he got hit in the ribs, he'd say, "Yep." Now, I'm not too sharp, but you see, even me, I'd move over. You'd all have dealt me in the ribs once, and I'd move. And right away, I was getting a bad impression of Alcoholics Anonymous. About 5 o'clock, they decided to leave. They'd had all they could take. And they got to the door and they said, "We'll be back to get you at 8 o'clock for a meeting." And the smart guy, the four-word fella, he said, "Just remember, if you don't take that drink, you stay sober." And I thought, that guy has got something. About 4 months later, it hit me, how inconsiderate can you be to get two guys to drive 40 miles and tell you if you don't drink, you'll stay sober? I'd never do that. I thought, what a hell of an idea. How practical. But now, I'm going to go into a part in the book here. As soon as they left, I went across the alley to a guy I was drinking with downtown that day before. And these are the things that I want to remember. And the reason I relate these, because probably none of you people have ever done this, and it's new to you. But I went across the alley and up his back stairs, walked through the door. Roy was sitting there with a glass of whiskey, went in his kitchen. He went to take a drink. I said, "Put that down, I'll kill you." Now, you can't describe an expression. You personally have to see it. He said, "What happened to you?" I said, "I quit drinking." He said, "When?" I said, "Must be 6-8 hours now." Now, I live in Little Italy. I haven't even been to a meeting, and I'm already heading around beginning to pour out the wine. What does the book say about these things, about us talking about alcohol? It says nobody wants to be hear anything about alcohol. So it says it wouldn't even do temperance drinking any good to hear anything about alcohol by one who hates it. I think this is so important. It says any scheme to shield the alcoholic from temptation is doomed to failure. That's what's printed in here. But here's the Oral Roberts of AA has hit the streets, and I'm 3 hours away from my first meeting. Now let's look what the book says. But the ex-problem drinker who has found the solution, who has properly earned the facts about himself, not AA, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. Isn't that interesting? And yet, we go to AA day, and after our first meeting, boy, I got to get a hold of my sister and my brother-in-law, because he was with me. I'm thinking, I hope they moved the hell out of Arizona. You see, all of a sudden, I'm not going to be an example of this program. I'm going to be a preacher of it. Preaching the evils of alcohol. They took me to my first meeting. 28 years old, 6 foot tall, 130 pounds, 4 pounds in that years, a black shoe and a brown one on, and then wine sores all over me. And the first guy at the door shook my hand and said, "Welcome in the right place." I said, 28 years, first time I ever heard that. I had magistrates tell me where I should be, some even enforced it. They took me up and sent me right in the front row, right where this gentleman sitting over here on that end. And every person got up the street was about 55 or 60, you know, false teeth, a cane, hearing aid, saying, "If you work with these gentlemen," I'm thinking, "I'm glad we can't wait to get it. Where do you keep them?" And they all had suspenders in them days, and they could lean back over and their head touch the floor and come right back up without the soles of their feet coming off of the floor. And I swore to give all of them about $8 worth of change in their pocket. And they'd all rattle out and say, "Material, we don't mean nothing." I thought, well, if I look like that, they wouldn't mean a hell of a lot to me either. And I'd watch these people leave in Buicks and Lincolns and Cadillacs, and I thought, now I missed something, and they're bloody drunk. And it's interesting how this happens. Material things mean absolutely nothing to me today, because I got them. I see so many people telling people today that all the things that are very important to them, you got them, and you're saying, "That's not important, you just get to a meeting." Really? I'll tell you, when I'm hungry, I want to be fed. When I'm naked, I want to be clothed. When I'm hated, I want to be loved. And that's how this thing all works. But they will love better. But I will not accept unacceptable conditions. And I just think that there's so much in here where I can pick out the paragraph that's applicable to my thinking, but I ain't going to quote the one that's against it. I'm famous for that. and say, you see, this is based on personal experience. And do you learn anything from your personal experience? It's like the two hunters back in Ontario, up in our part of the country. And they threw them into this lake hunting, and they taxied up to the dock, and the pilot let them out and said, okay, now I'll be back next Tuesday with two moose. That's all we can take out of here on this plane. Next Tuesday he pulls back, and there they are, and they got three moose. And he said, I told you, we can't take three moose, you 200 in your gear out of here in that plane. He said, look, we heard the same line from the pilot last year. We gave him $500, and he took the money, and he took that three moose. So this guy went for it. And he loaded all the gear on, and they went down the plane and the lake and cleared the water and across the trees, and they went about 10,000 yards and crashed. And when they come through, 100 said the other, well, he said, 1,000 yards further than we got last year. That's pretty much the way we operate. You know, it's like the old guy that went to the doctor. And I don't think it was gone. But he said to the doctor, he said, we've been married 45 years and our sex life is all shot to hell. She can care less. The doctor said, I'm going to give you this prescription. And you go home tonight, and he said, when she's having her tea before she goes to bed, drop a couple of these in it. So they were sitting there, and he said, sweetheart, look at that gorgeous moon. And she looked out, and he dropped two in hers, and he thought, to hell, I put two in mine, too. So he did, and they both fell sound asleep. About 3 o'clock in the morning, she came out of this deep sleep, sat up in bed, and threw her hands up and said, I need a man. 2 minutes later, he woke up and threw his hands up and said, me too. You don't have to wish nothing bad on the drunk. Leave him alone. He will screw it up himself. Leave him alone. He's operating on experience. So I want to tell you, I come home from that first meeting and I was fired up like you wouldn't believe. My next 2 years I was in small debts court 41 times. I owed everybody that sold everything. Powdered milk, mixed matches, and types of foods. I never paid anything in my entire life. Nothing. And how differently I live today. I found one sucker left and borrowed $200 and bought an old $200 truck and started the trucking business. And I want to tell you, my first 3 or 4 years in AA, you can write a book on. My first set of business cards cost more than my truck, and I still got some of them. They were beautiful. Black embossed cards with 14 karat gold leaf lettering, citywide cartage, moving and storage, Lewis Fenimore cousin. If you're only bloody employee, call yourself whatever the hell you want. I run my titles concurrent, you know. One week I'd be chairman of the board. I mean, you talk about that. And then the next thing was, I got me a Cadillac. I figured it's quicker to look successful than be successful. And if I had to get at a meeting at 5 o'clock, that caddy sat right in front of the door. And everybody was thinking, boy, Fenimore is doing good. Now it appeared that way. Let's go over in the book. We'll see what it says here. Man, something. And does not science demonstrate that visual proof is the weakest proof? It is being constantly revealed as mankind studies the material world. That outward appearance, this is not inward reality at all. Now that's all in this book, and they got it hidden. It's bloody hard to find. I tell you, they read it. But it's in there. And you know, I've been dumb enough to believe what's in here. I'm so grateful today for some of the horrible difficulties that AA gives me every day. I'm so grateful for them. Like standing in bank lineups, being in traffic jams on the freeway, standing in a lineup at Walmart to pay. I'm grateful for them. I wasn't allowed none of them when I come here. I never went in a bank. I didn't own a car. I couldn't go to Walmart. I'm grateful for these things today. And most of the people I hear bellyache about, oh, you got to sit in that lineup for 3 hours to get there. Well, stay home then. I mean, this thing is so simple. But why should we load that onto other people, this constant bellyaching, when it has nothing to do with nothing? If you've got to go somewhere, you've got to go. If you don't want to set the lineup, stay out of it. Isn't that pretty simple? So I think these are the things that happened. And on my 3 year sober, there was a fellow speaking from Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, and that's where they put a step. Type of a step series together for the AA steps is called Novalco, which is a Greek word, N-O-V-A-L-C-O, for novice alcoholic, for new alcoholic. And I started one of them some 32 years ago, and I shared that every week. Now, I want to just tell you a little something about it. People say, well, I'm not a good I don't agree with this and I don't agree with that. Out of the first 118 women that went through two series, 111 have never drank. I'm talking about facts. I'm talking about facts, not theories. It says that it's a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other. And they made a lot of difference between sharing experiences and opposing opinions. But they may solve their common problem. There's no S on that word. This thing was designed by drugs for drugs. If we lose sight of that, we're in a hell of a pile of trouble. It says our common problem. We've got lots of difficulties in life. I still have a hell of a lot of fun with the business of living, but I've recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body where, oh, I can't do that, I can't go there, no, that's not for me. Everything's for me. Everything's for me. With brains and leg elastic, I wouldn't have enough to make a jerk shot for a mosquito, but I've covered the whole world. So nobody wants to tell me I can't do this, I can't go there, and that's not. Everything's for me. And so we started the step series. And I've got it all in a package. It's about that thick. And everything is on paper. Every step is on paper. I brought some down and gave to a lady. The serenity prayer is all broken down. God, and what that means. Grant, what a grant means and what you have to do to be worthy of a grant. Every word is broken down. Step one is all on paper. Step two, step three, step four. I know there's one in here, but I have five different step fives, just so in case there's something in here that isn't covered. You see, I find lots of times that you have to explain it. I have one step five. The first question is, what is it in other people that bother you? Work on that one to fall. But these steps are all in past tense. It doesn't say we'll make a decision. It said we made a decision. It doesn't say we'll come to believe. It said we came to believe. And I listen to people very closely today. I listen to what they say, and then I watch instantly what they do. It said we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol. And do you know that 8 out of 10 people that read that say, and their lives have become unmanageable. There's no and in there. There's a little dash. You know, that lady that I hit in the face, my mom, in 1992, she called and asked a friend of mine to come get her to come out and spend her final years with me. 2 weeks ago, last Tuesday, we had the privilege of spreading her ashes on the Better River. Do you know, her headstone would read Yvonne Marie Fenimore, 1914-2000. You know, them two numbers mean nothing. It's the dash in between that is so important. It's the dash in between and step one that is so important. Alcohol is the last word when it says we're powerless over alcohol. I was powerless over saying no when I should say no, saying yes when I should say yes. Being at places I shouldn't be, I was powerless over associating with people I shouldn't be around. I was powerless over getting to know the difference between people pleasing and pleasing people. That's where the powerlessness come in. Alcohol was just what I used so I could live with that type of powerlessness. Alcohol was not a problem for me. Maybe it was. If that was the case, the day I quit drinking, I should have never done nothing wrong again. I never really started doing things wrong until I quit drinking. I created more troubles after I quit than I ever did before. Because in Vancouver, I only drank 4.5 years, and every week I never failed. I only went 12 blocks and they put me in jail. I mean, I never created a lot of trouble. But when that poor policeman taking me up on the elevator, you know what happens when they stop between floors. Then you're mouthy with big ears and not much weight. Yeah. The magistrate had no trouble the next day deciding I'd been in the head. He didn't know it was this poor policeman on the elevator. So it said that our lives had become unmanageable. They told me right there that it arrived. It wasn't on the way. It's here. Tell more. Said, came to believe in a power greater than yourself. A lot of people in this God stuff, they don't give me a church. See, they took that church right away from me. They said, we came to believe that a power greater than yourself, not in a power greater than yourself. I'm amazed at how thoughtful they were for idiots like me, that they knew that making decisions wasn't a strong point. It's quite obvious they only done it once in step three. Agreeing with them was my easy one. But it's amazing. They took that right away. They said they came to believe that a power greater than self could restore us to sanity. Sanity and insanity is the customer in here, positive and negative thinking. It's not mental hospitals. Some go there. But I could be restored. Now, for many years since I sobered up, I've done vintage cars. I've done a 29 Buick and a 38 Buick and a 40 Dodge. And I looked up the meaning of the word restore. And I hear people say, well, a bunch of miracles. When you look up the word restore, it says to return to original form. That's interesting. I'm no miracle. I've just been returned to what it was when I was a little boy, where I can believe, and where I can trust, where I can love, and where I can obey. I've just been returned to what it was when I was a wee little boy. And you know, I said that I like being a little boy. No, and I'm painful. Easy to stay a child. But these steps have given me a lifestyle today that is absolutely unbelievable. Every dream I've ever had as a little boy has come true. Every place I've ever wanted to go, I've been. And everybody I've ever wanted to meet, I've met. When I step in my den today and look around my walls, you have no idea. I sit there and I get emotional and I see some of the things upon my wall signed by the governor of the state of Kentucky and the president of the United States. And I'm thinking, here's a guy that was singing for $3 37 years ago in the Skid Row mission. Don't tell me this thing don't work. It does. Said we made a decision to turn our will and our lives, and it doesn't say we turn it over to God. That's what's very interesting to me. It doesn't say that. It says I turn it over to the care of God. Anything I turn over to somebody, I expect him to do it. But if I turn it over to his care, I want him to look after it till I'm in a position to take it back and straighten it out. Big difference. I hear people say, well, God wants me to have a job, I'll get one. I'm thinking, who in hell are you praying to? I needed a drink to go apply for a job. Once I got the drink, I was too good for it. I've been looking for God's employment agency for 65 years. I was telling you, people are a lot different. Where I come from, most of the people that I run into today, if the desire to work hits them, they lay down till it leaves. You don't have to worry about praying to God to get them a job. They're just living easy does it, one day at a time. I'm going to give her hell tomorrow. If everybody in Vancouver did what they're going to do tomorrow, the city would go nuts. This says this is a design for living, not making a living. And so you need a design for living before you start making a living. And we don't see that. We all have one thing in common. We're all different. And I like a lot of, I have probably every one-line book by every writer, Oscar Wilde, Robbie Burns says, if we could only see ourselves as others see us. That was written a long time ago. Oscar Wilde said, don't ever regret growing old. Think of those that are never given that privilege. Michael Todd said, the one statement that has always annoyed me was that it's tough to be poor, because he said, being poor is a state of mind, being broke is a temporary circumstance. So that's what we're talking. This is a design for living that straightens out this state of mind. It says in the book, the main problem with the alcoholic centers in his head rather than in his body. And you can talk about any portion of a man's anatomy, he can brag about some, but don't discuss his head. He don't want anyone in there unsolicited telling him he's nuts. You know, I was speaking at a treatment center one day, and this young fellow came up and he said, man, you're cool. I said, you should look up the meaning of the word cool. It says not so hot in the dictionary. So the next guy that comes up and says, man, you're cool. What are you reading? Literally said, you should not so hot. But like I got six kids, they talk to me by the hours, and everything was totally radical and far out and awesome. And every now and then I say, yep. And that's all I have to say. I don't know what the hell they're talking about. But they don't want me to know. They tell me in English. It's hard to believe that my children are bilingual. But it says we made a decision to turn our lives over to the care of God, as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry. You know, what if God will help us be happy and joyous and free? So when I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as we understand him, and I want to become happy, joyous, and free. That is all based, every bit of it is based on how I treat you, not how I treat me. You can bet your backside that I treat you good. But I must be hard on myself and considerate of you. And I just think that's so important. He said he made a searching and fearless moral inventory of the self, not a fearful immoral. And it's other selves. Don't include them, people. Other people are included. But it says an inventory of ourselves. Now, it's very difficult to do that without running down all the other idiots who've come into it. And you know, we have a quality that not a lot of people have. We're the only group of people in the world that can walk into a room with 400 people and pick the jerks and shit like that. Even way in the back. Never took a course on it. It's just a built-in feature to pick out the idiots. And I don't know how it happens. Not exactly. It's, well, I suppose they've done a lot of research on it. I've just never got into it with all these high-powered technologies they have today. Then it says we admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. There's no S on that. It's singular. It's the nature of our wrongs. I've done a retreat in Oregon several years ago. 82 men, there were 5 priests there. They allowed 30 minutes for a step 5 up on the Oregon River. 30 minutes. And I talked to one of them. And I said, well, Doc, at our treatment center, that step 5 was 3 to 5 hours. And he said, well, they must not talk about the nature of their wrongs. They must talk about the wrongs. And all of a sudden it hit me. I could say that I was unfaithful to my wife. And everybody would say, we know that. We want to know why. And I thought, they're getting personal now. They're stripping the bitches right off you. If you're not prepared to deal with the nature of the wrong, for God's sake, don't admit what you've done wrong. That's where this new word stress comes from, is when you admit everything you've done wrong, don't want to do nothing about it. That's why people get stressed out. And so this was me. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't take inventory, I took stock. And I seen some gorgeous ladies, and yes, I was unfaithful to my wife. And we got divorced after nearly 12 years together. We have 6 children. And you know, she married my best friend. And today, she is my best friend. I spoke at a deal a week ago Saturday night, and who was sitting beside Winnie, but my wife Linda, but Winnie and Dawn. She comes to our place for dinner, we go there. I don't have no time for that pettiness. Something's over, it's over. I did some wrongs, they did some wrongs, we did some wrongs, it done some wrongs. I dealt with that. Everybody in life that I meet today is my friend. And the friend is the guy or gal that walked in when the rest of the world walked out. But that borderline sometime between humility and senility is very thin. It's not a long, drawn out affair. Humility is not thinking less of me, but it's thinking of me less. And it's very hard, you know, when we talk about humility. My life is an open book today. My old sponsor, when he died, it was probably tougher on me than when Daddy died. My sponsor was from Tyler, Texas, Joe, Rhino Joe. I have a lot of his things in my den today. The key to the cell he was locked up in when I called on him, and I have a little urn of his ashes in my den. He meant so much to me. He was such a gentleman. He was such a direct man. He helped me in so many ways. He was the one that said, I want you to start reading this book. And I thought, now he's going to give me a test on it, so I'll keep reading it. So as a result, I read 8 pages of this every day of the year, 365 days a year. There's one story I read every Friday, Freedom from Bondage. I read that every Friday. And she said the medical profession would say I'm the way I am now because of what happened to me as a child. But AA taught me I'm the way I am now because of the way I reacted to what happened to me as a child. And right away I realized it's amazing. They have a chapter called Interaction, but they don't have one called Interreaction. Isn't it amazing how differently we behave when someone disagrees with us? When someone don't do things the way I think they should be done. Leave when I think we should leave. Isn't it amazing how differently we behave? I'm so privileged just to be able to leave. I'm so privileged just to be able to arrive. These are the things that I look at today. It says we humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings, and we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, my thinking and my actions. Dr. Bob says we must watch our errant tongues. I like the last paragraph in his story. It says whether you be atheist, agnostic, skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride. I like that line. It keeps you from accepting what's in this book. It doesn't say reading what's in this book. I feel sorry for you. If you feel you can beat the game alone, that's your affair. But if you want to quit drinking alcohol for good and for all, like that's quite a while, we know we have the answer. These are promises. These are promises based on experience. Said we made a list of all persons we have harmed. It didn't say hurt. The visits. I go leave here today and tear Buddy to shreds for the next 4 years, and all of a sudden it gets back to him. And he said, how could a friend hurt me like that? Now it's hurt. But there was 4 years of harm. Be very careful what you say about the guy or gal sitting beside you. Be very careful. Treat them with love. I do not take any of my frustrations out on anybody else. None of them. And to me, that's a great deal of growth. Said we made direct demands to such people wherever possible. It doesn't say whenever possible. I read that. And what that said to me was I owe down on the man, and when I see him, I'll make it. But then once I got it explained to me, it didn't say that at all. It said, go find him. Well, if my eyesight serves me correctly, I'm going to see him. You can rest assured of that. I'll be watching for him. This book is to get me out of trouble, not avoid the trouble I'm in. Steps 10, 11, and 12 says, continue to take a personal inventory. It says, when we were wrong, not if we were wrong. And it says, promptly admitted it, not explain it. I never admitted anything in my life. Ever. I'd say to Bill, I'm sorry for what I said to you last Saturday night. And if he didn't say nothing, I said, but I'm going to tell you the bloody reason I said it. You give me 5 minutes, I'll have him apologize when he was even at the party. And that's what I want. I'll get this in my favor if it takes me all weekend. I'll have him coming back and saying, you know, Lou, I think he was right. And I thought, cool, man. This book here is incredible. It is unbelievable. You know, it's like the psychiatrist that was walking around the hospital visiting some of his alcoholic patients. He went outside for a coffee break. Here's this guy building a wall with brick. And he had his wheelbarrow full of cement. And he was watching him. Said to this guy, he said, please tell me why you're in here. Well, he said, my family resented me. He said, they had me committed. Well, he said, I've never seen a brick wall like that in my life. It's a piece of symmetrical beauty. He said, we need people with your talents on the outside. He said, come Thursday when the board meets, I'm on the board. I'm going to stand on your behalf and I'll have you out of here next Monday. He got up to walk away in his idiot, threw a brick and hit him in the back of the head, and down he went. When he finally come to him, was tight in the head, he got up and looked at him and said, now why did you do that? He said, I just didn't want you to forget Thursday. That's the way we've gone through life, throwing bricks, wondering why people reacted the way they did. You could have ducked. You know, that would be our response. These steps here are absolutely incredible. When I'm wrong, promptly admitted it. It says we sought through prayer and meditation. It tells me there is no other way. That's the only two mediums, prayer and meditation. To improve our conscious is awake or aware, a conscious contact with God, as we understood it. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us. What is knowledge of His will for us? To be happy, joyous, and free, and the power to carry it out. And all of that is based on how I treat you. I'll tell you, I got out of that trucking business after 12 years. I met a fellow who I brought to our step meeting. And he owns four of the largest custom designed jewelry stores in the city. A Danish fellow, very expensive store. He asked me one day, would you like to have lunch? I said, I'd love it. We had lunch, he said, you know, you've been driving truck all your life, and I've listened to you speak at meetings and share meetings. I don't know what the hell you're moving furniture more. How would you like to manage my main store? I said, I'd love it. I put an ad in the paper, and 6 weeks later, I had sold citywide cartage, moving in storage, which had new trucks in those days. And the following Monday, I was sitting in a beautiful jewelry store called the Rambler. He went to the bank and a lady came in, Mrs. Sabbath, wearing Sabbath Brothers, which was the most exclusive lady store in Vancouver. And she jumped a bunch of gemstones out and said, "What can you do with these?" And I felt like saying, "Shoot, you know. Here I got myself in another mess. I didn't know a ruby was red or an emerald was green." And Wagner came back and straightened us all out. And that night he said, "You forget about going to a meeting tonight, my friend." He said, "I want you to sit down and write down every reason why somebody wouldn't want to buy a piece of jewelry in this store." And what he was talking about was handling objections. We love yes, we hate no. We love I'll go with you. We don't like no, I don't feel like going. We don't like rejection. We better learn to handle it. The road to success is quite often under construction. At the end of the first month, he worked with me to show me the ropes. And I still carry my records today, and that's 26 years ago. At the end of the first month, his sales were $8,700, and mine was $33,481, and I've been selling ever since. I've had a great time. I left there after 3 years and went selling electric vacuum cleaners to get some experience in the rejection. You sure as hell get it there, I'll tell you. They still tell a story about me at Electrolux conventions up in Vancouver. I was about my fourth or fifth day in the job, and they have these bloody pep talks on Monday morning, you know, of what you're supposed to do. And I went flying out of there like a bullet, you know, with a vacuum cleaner in one hand, the shampoo in the other, and I went out into the area and I was in there. I rang this lady's doorbell. She came to the door. I gave her my card, and I was so fired up. I said, "Good morning, I'm Mr. Fenimore, I'm your new Electrolux representative in this area." And she slammed that door, and I never knew that a door could be slammed that hard and a house still stays like upright. First time I'd ever done cold selling. And why I did it, I don't know. I ran around the back and rang her back doorbell. She came back there, and I said, "God, I hope you're not as unhappy as the lady was just at the front door." I didn't sell her a vacuum, I didn't have to. I sold a ton of them. But I broke down a barrier. She said, "Would you like a coffee?" And I went in and sat down and I found out what was bothering her. That's what this thing is all about. That's what this thing is all about, is to break down the barriers, not create barriers. I think when you get on a committee, it's so important to make up your mind, are you going on there as a troubleshooter or a troublemaker? We have both. You're going on there to find out what you can do to better that committee, what you can do to add to the party, not to control it. And these are the things that AA has taught me. My wife is sitting here today. We've never had an argument or a fight. And we'll be married 9 years in another week. We've never had, and I don't expect we ever will. And it's very simple. You can say, "Oh, that can't be." Well, ask her. She's present. I'm not telling you something that can't be verified. I wouldn't want to change a thing about her. Nothing. The only thing we fight and argue over is because people won't do it our way. Hell, is any one of us got the last name of Sinatra? I did it my way? That's not the way it is. I met Linda at a roundup like this, but I wasn't supposed to be at. The speaker backed out. She wasn't supposed to be there, and she went there to take a drunken cousin to see if he'd hear anything. He's still drunk and we're married. So this thing works. Well, what's interesting, we never even had a cup of coffee that weekend. And I gave her my card. And I said, "You know, if you're ever in Vancouver, give us a call." And she thought when I said, "Give us a call," I was married. And that weekend I happened, I wasn't. And I got drunk for that. I wake up with the goonies and go to bed with the wands. And 2 months later, she wrote me a letter in October. And said she'd got some of my tapes and she'd listened to them, and they'd touched a lot of areas of her life. And her husband had died. They had saved for 25 years to go to Australia on their 25th anniversary, and he died less than a year before with multiple sclerosis. And like I said to Linda, I said, "You get your ass on an airplane and go. That's what Dan would want you to do." And we phoned and wrote letters. And we weren't in the sack or in bed or anything else until the following year. She came back in February, and I flew to Calgary and met her plane. I went back 2 weeks later,
with a nice diamond ring and asked her if she'd accept it. And from my, I'm sharing experiences again, I've never had a lady turn one of them down from me anyway. She accepted that. She came out in June, and we were married in the following October. And we traveled the world. I've traveled the whole world. All of the dreams. 1985, when I was asked to speak at the National AA Convention in South Africa, and I spent 3 months there, and they flew me to 26 places throughout Africa. They never tell me this thing don't work. I'm going to tell you why. I stayed 4 days with Rufus and his family in Soweto, the only white person and 7 million black people, and if you could come to my den, I'd show you what they presented to me. They held a civic ceremony. They presented me to something that is only presented to heads of states, a trap in Vancouver. Don't tell me it don't work. I went to Durban and went from there up into Zululand. And at that particular time, in 1985, Bubulizi, who was head of the Zulu tribe, would not allow any heads of state in the Zulu land. I got in there because his wife had 18 months of sobriety. Don't ever tell me it can't be done. It can. Life is a journey. It isn't a destination. Just remember what we have here today, not what we don't have. It's like the lady that lived in New York City, her son lived in Florida. He had 2 children, which was her grandchildren. And he wouldn't let her come down to him because she was a drunk. And finally she sent it up and he said, okay, Mom, you can come down and see the grandchildren. And she came down. The first day she was down there, she took the little boy and the little girl down and set him right by the ocean. And all of a sudden the waves come in and washed her little grandson right out in the ocean. She looked up and said, dear God, if you've never done anything for me before in your life, would you please return my grandson? And then the next motion of wave brought him back in plunk and right at her feet. And she looked down and looked back up and said, he had a cap. And many, many times, that's exactly how things work. For us, who had a cap. I'm grateful for all the little things. Old Joe told me about something that I've never forgot. He said, we have 2 primary purposes in this fellowship. He said, one's in the book, one isn't. He said, I'm going to let you in on both of them. He said, one of you says is our primary purpose is to stay sober. He said, it doesn't say get sober. Big difference, ain't it? I'll tell you, I put out a plea today. Not one person in this audience ever needs to take a drink to prove to me it don't work. Please stay sober. We need you. But he said our primary purpose was to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. He said to me, he said, did we ever have anyone ever tell you to stay sober was an achievement? PhDs, master's degrees, PAs, it all has to be hanging on the wall in a paper. He said, the greatest achievement you will ever receive is to watch the eyes open and someone walk before you who couldn't before. He said the second primary purpose is to get a lifestyle together that's open for inspection 24 hours a day. My relationships, my marriage, my kids, my finances, what I've done, where I've been, how I live is open for inspection 24 hours a day. What you hear here, come to my home and see it. I like to tell how I live at home. It says when we get our life in order, I think before you even go any further, see what your bloody house looks like. I mean, your domain where you live. This is a design for living. So where do you live? What does that look like? Like our home is open for visiting 24 hours a day. When I come out of the shower in the morning, the walls is washed down, the glass doors is done, the mirrors is done in the bathroom, the taps are polished, my clothes are put away, when I'm done with the coffee is dried out and put away. When I get up in the morning, if Linda's making coffee, I make the bed. We have a home that both of us participate in the upkeep of our home. She is not my flunky or my maid or my slave. And
3 years ago when she was in New Zealand, like she said, she jumped off of that original bridge in Queenstown, 491 feet down a canyon with my dope on a rope. I don't do them things. I won't do anything with a chance of me breaking a leg or arm or limb. She will do anything. Fly up in a kite or you name it. I'm scared to say, I dare you to do anything. I just won't. That's because she was just... I quit playing golf because I just didn't want to go and play golf and leave her sitting in the hotel. 3 years ago, she said, well, maybe I'll try that, honey. So I got her a set of clubs, and I've only seen her 3 times in 3 years. You can't get away from the golf course. So, you know, folks, life is really, it's a life where you can come in here and be yourself and be honest. Tell people where you've been, what you've done, who you've done it with. I mean, they say there's certain things. I can talk to anybody who's sitting in this front room. Mickey, Chuck, Bill, I can talk to them about anything I've done, or who I've done it with, or where I've been, or what I went to jail for. You ain't going to punish me no more. God told me that can't happen. You punished yourself, David. You know, it's like the minister that they sent him to this parish, and the bishop told him, he said, if you don't make it here, honey, you had it. So he got all moved in. He was sitting in his office on Monday morning and heard the door open in the church and his footsteps coming towards him. Just before that fellow got to the door, he picked up the phone and said, over $3,000 a month, I won't leave this parish. He said, I shook my first day here. I've never met any of my counselor or any of my parishioners yet. So he said, I don't have a lot of time. He said, no, for $5,000 a month, I won't leave. He said, if you could see the condition this parish has been left in, you wondered why they selected me to come here and straighten this mess out. So he said, give me a call in a week or 10 days, we'll get together and have a coffee. We hung up that phone. And this fellow was now in his office, and he said, I hope you can see by that phone call that I'm busy. It's my first day here, and I've never met any of my counselors or any of my parishioners yet, so I don't have a lot of time. He said, I won't be here too long, Evan. I'm just here to hook up that phone. So, I think these are the things that we look at today, where it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. What is the spiritual awakening? The definition of that is a complete transformation of thought. If you have completely changed your way as a result of these steps, you're thinking, then you're ready to carry this message. Until then, no. Even when you make a 12-step call, what does it tell you? It says, give him a copy of this book. Ask him to read it. After he has read it, ask him what his choice is to be. How many have done that? I don't know them down here. We've got people 40 years older that have never read this book. Like Don says, I read early comes of age. I read it constantly. Not to go to quote to you the history of AA, but so that I know what and how I belong to. This is a precious movement. It's not the same. People say AA is the same all over the world. That's a bunch of people who've never traveled. We're leaving very shortly, Linda and I, for Australia, New Zealand. I was quoting a big book in Winton, a little town in the South Island, New Zealand. The chairman said, shut up, would you? They don't allow a big book in the meetings. They said it's outdated. And I mean, so please be respectful of what you have here. They don't have this all over the world. Treasure it. Nurture it. Plant it. Hoe it. Cultivate it. This is what this new person needs. They want to be loved better just like you and I was. You know, prior to AA, when my kids seen me, when I had to go to the bathroom, no matter what it was for, I never moved an inch. I just went. There's lead and odor I can't go through, but, you know. And I think these are the things that I look at today. What does it say back in the spiritual experience? Very interesting. It says he finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. It must be by a power greater than yourself. I'm going to read you a little something that was in the big book, and I didn't even know they put this in there about me, because I'd never met this man and his story. It says, this latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in great things accomplished, but in daily living.
courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old and patient champion bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great. But I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God, who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving men as I can. That pretty well tells the story a little bit more. There's another little deal that says so much on one of my cards here. And it says, you don't have to tell how you live each day. You don't have to say if you work or you play. A tried true barometer serves in its place. However you live, it will show in your face. The faults of deceit that you bear in your heart will not stand side where first got to start, for sooner and blood are a thin pin of lace that you wear in your heart, it will show in your face. If your life is unselfish, you're forever as you live, but not what you get, but how much you can give. If you live close to God and His infinite grace, you don't have to tell it. It will show in your face. I was speaking one Sunday, I got to get out of here. I was speaking one Sunday morning with two new people sat in the front row, and one guy poked the other one and said, what comes after this guy? He said, Monday. So, part of the way of getting a message, I'm going to close with a little story. I don't know how you people carry the message. Story about this minister. Sitting in church on Sunday morning up behind the pulpit, and he looked down, there was one cowboy sitting there. He walked down to him and he said, there's only two of us here, do you think we should hold a service? Well, he said, Reverend, he said, I don't know very good about preaching, but I know quite a bit about cattle, and if I pulled up the car and load of hay there, I'd feed it. So he got the message. And he went up and gave this guy everything he had in scripture, verse, and song. And then he got done. He came down and he said, what do you think? He said, well, Reverend, I don't know a great deal about preaching. I know quite a bit about cattle. And if I pulled up the cow and load of hay and there was a cow there, I wouldn't give it the whole load. Once again, I only pray that I can be the type of friend you've been to me. Good day, and God bless you.